From the Center for Racial Equity in Education, this is Deep Rooted, a brief history of race and education in North Carolina, written by Ethan Roy and James E. Ford. Deep Rooted is a historical companion piece to Creed's Erasing Inequities Report. You can access both reports at our website, creed-nc.org. And now, episode 4. The Swan Decision and Desegregation. In 1971, the Supreme Court found in Swan v. Charlotte Mecklenburg Schools that school districts could use busing to implement desegregation in public schools. The Charlotte Mecklenburg school system quickly became a desegregation model for districts around the country. It seemed the promise of Brown might finally be realized in Mecklenburg County, but even as Charlotte schools gained racial balance, black students were bused more often and more longer distances than white students. Conditions for education continued to improve under the Holzhauser administration. Upon taking office in 1972, Governor Holzhauser proposed plans to expand kindergarten, reduce class size, and renovate school buildings. The state allocated $300 million for new school construction and provided more benefits for educators and administrators. The primary reading program, founded in 1975, provided assistance in each classroom in third grade and below and professional development for educators. In response to increasing desegregation, white families began moving to suburban school districts or enrolling their children in private schools, a continuation of the white flight phenomenon that had begun in the 1960s. According to Batchelor, by 1970, more than 230 new private academies, most enrolling only white students, had opened in North Carolina. More than 35,000 white students had enrolled in private, all-white schools by 1971. These schools did not hide their intentions and efforts to recruit white students. One promotional brochure from Halifax County read, "It is the earnest conviction of the trustees of Enfield Academy Incorporated that the integrity and improvement of the different races can best be accomplished by maintaining a segregated school." These quote-unquote white academies popped up all over the state. Most whites, though, stayed in the public school system and sent their children to desegregated schools. Through the busing, 99.5% of the state's black students attended desegregated schools during the 1972-73 school year. Furthermore, over 90% of the state's school system had been formally declared unitary, and North Carolina was operating the most thoroughly desegregated school system in the South. But just a few years later, the forces of resegregation began to lay their foundations, and desegregation began to slow by the late 1970s in many parts of the state, as white flight shifted racial demographics between city and county school districts. This trend was not isolated to a few counties. It occurred across the state. The Milliken v. Bradley decision in 1974 forbade desegregation orders from crossing district lines, ensuring de facto segregation, especially in urban centers. The trend of court decisions allowing resegregation to gain momentum would strengthen in the coming decades. Resegregation in the case of Charlotte Mecklenburg Schools. A 1997 ruling appeared to take a step towards racial and economic equity. In the Hope County Board of Education versus State, or Leandro versus State, the court found the state constitution did not require all school districts to receive equal funding, but that every student had the right to a quote-unquote, sound basic education, and schools in economically poor areas must receive additional funding. Thanks to the intersection of race and poverty in North Carolina, many underfunded districts had high African American enrollment. Despite this ruling, the funding disparities that characterized public education in North Carolina remain today, and the Leandro case is ongoing. On the 20th anniversary of the Leandro lawsuit in July 2017, both sides in the Leandro case filed a joint motion requesting an independent consultant to make recommendations on how to meet North Carolina's obligation set out in the Leandro decision. WestEd, the independent consultant selected by the parties, sent its report to the judge overseeing the case on June 17, 2019. The report was released in December 2019. Concurrently, Governor Roy Cooper created the Governor's Commission on Access to Sound Basic Education in 2017 to make recommendations to the state on how to meet its obligations under the Leandro decision. Resegregation gained steam after the Capiquione v. Charlotte-Mecklenburg Schools case virtually overturned the Swan decision of 1971. School districts were no longer required to use busing as a tool to desegregate schools. The era of court-mandated integration efforts in North Carolina was effectively ended at the hands of Judge Robert Potter, who had disagreed with the busing plans of the early 1970s. Judge Potter's decision impacted resegregation throughout the state. In Charlotte, for example, during the 2002 through 2003 school year, 48% of blacks were attending quote-unquote black schools, while in 1999 through 2000, nearly 30% of white students were attending quote-unquote white schools. In another example, Forsyth County implemented a school choice policy, abandoning more than two decades of plans promoting racial balance and resulting in the rapid resegregation of Forsyth County schools. Statewide, the number of highly segregated schools where minority students make up at least 90% of the student body increased from 3.2% in 1989 to 10.2% in 2010. Furthermore, in 2011, North Carolina lifted the cap of 100 charter schools permitted to operate in the state. Absent civil rights standards, charter schools can exacerbate segregation, experts say, and are likely to be more segregated than the traditional public schools in the surrounding area. Segregated housing patterns that intersect with socioeconomic status also perpetuate segregation in North Carolina's public schools, and schools closer to racially segregated neighborhoods have higher percentages of failure rates and poverty. Recent developments in the Charlotte-Mecklenburg area make for an illustrative case study. A March 2018 Newsweek article claims, "In Charlotte in 2018, like most other American cities, schools are nearly as segregated as they were before the 1954 Supreme Court decision of Brown," and quotes area civil rights attorney James Ferguson. "There is no core of people who are actively pushing for school desegregation. We're almost back to where we started from. In fact, at the current pace, Charlotte-Mecklenburg schools will be, quote-unquote, back to where we started from, or worse." In June 2018, the state legislature passed the House Bill 514, allowing the majority, white, Charlotte suburbs of Cornelius, 85% white, Huntersville, 77% white, Matthews, 78% white, and Mint Hill, 73% white, to create their own charter schools. While some magnet schools in the state have created well-funded integrated facilities and student bodies, since the removal of the artificial cap of 100 charters in 2011, the surge in charter schools has bolstered resegregation. Recent research found that by 2014, more than a fifth of North Carolina's charter schools were more than 90% white, compared to a tenth in 1998. And while the overall population of North Carolina public schools has become less white, the charter school population has become increasingly white. The complexity of this issue should be noted, as charters in the state are very popular in communities of color. Many charter schools are actually majority black and brown, but the degree to which they exacerbate segregation is contested. While Republican lawmakers claim House Bill 514 has nothing to do with race, critics cite race as the primary motivator. In June 2018, North Carolina NAACP President T. Anthony Spearman said the bill attempted to create, quote-unquote, Jim Crow independent schools. Others have said the bill attempts to build a white fence around the Charlotte area, or, as Matthews Mayor Pro Tem John Higdon says, the bill is about, quote-unquote, kids going to schools near their homes and not being under the constant threat of reassignment. Today, the promise of Freedom Hill. People often say history takes a linear path towards progress, that current and future generations will inevitably fare better than those who came before them. But the harsh lens of today's Princeville shows otherwise. The town and its education facilities have been battered by floods caused by recent hurricanes. Princeville now is part of the Edgecombe County school system, where data on race and gender continue to show racial disparities within the public schools. According to the Youth Justice Project, Edgecombe County schools had 5,999 students during the 2016 through 17 school year, 56.9% black and 30.1% white. Yet, black female students faced 415 short-term suspensions, compared to only 97 for white females. Black male short-term suspensions numbered 1,321, while their white male counterparts had 250 suspensions. Thus, black male students in Edgecombe County were over five times more likely to be suspended than white male students. In total, black students in Edgecombe County comprised 77.9% of all suspensions, despite being only 56.9% of the total student population. 63 students dropped out of high school in Edgecombe County during 2016-17 school year. 36 were black, while 20 were white, a 55% difference. Black students also performed lower than whites and Hispanics on high school end-of-course exams. For the 2016 through 17 school year, the overall percentage of Edgecombe County high school students considered, quote-unquote, college and career ready, was 26.3%. White students fared best at 42.8%, followed by Hispanics at 31.9%. While only 15.6% of black students were considered, quote-unquote, college and career ready. These racial disparities appeared well before the students got to high school. During the 2016 through 17 school year, white students in 3rd through 8th grades in Edgecombe County were 2.3 times more likely to score college and career ready on end-of-grade exams than black students in the same grades. These data track with statewide trends. CREED's forthcoming report, Erasing Inequities, takes a comprehensive look at racial disparities across key academic indicators in North Carolina. Given the historical tendency for African Americans to associate education with freedom, one must ask, how free are the citizens of Freedom Hill? Is Freedom Hill a metaphor for the current state of racial equity in North Carolina public schools? Such racial inequality, a product of deep-rooted history of slavery, Jim Crow, and racism denies black students not only their state constitutional right to a sound basic education, but also their 14th Amendment right to equality under the law. We are not here by chance or coincidence. The problem of race-based disparities in education has been constructed and preserved for centuries by federal, state, and local governments. Even now, the task of creating an equitable education system remains an elusive goal. The roots run deep. Perhaps by explaining our state's history of race and education, we can acknowledge our intentions and strengthen our resolve. The burden falls not only on all citizens of North Carolina, but also on the governance and the institutions that have brought us to this point. The March Toward Freedom Hill continues. Deep Rooted is a production of the Center for Racial Equity in Education. The podcast was narrated and edited by Chewy Malik. Our theme music was created by Naturally on BeatStars. You can find all of our reports and learn more about Creed on our website, creed-nc.org. Also, check out our other podcast, On the Margins, wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you for listening. Now that you know, what will you do about it?